woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Hello and welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 10, up, yeah. Nasdaq futures up 36, up is not something word you've used lately when it comes to the market. So yeah, we're trying to do a little bit of a bounce here this morning after a very nasty day yesterday. Just for a review while everybody's sitting down, hopefully. Well, the buy the dippers absolutely got scrambled yesterday. It was a bad day for those dudes because we have a few to trade through our electronic platform. But that instinct is going to die hard. I mean, it's the strategy that's worked forever. But the Dow was down 890, S&P was down 155, and the Nasdaq was down like 800 or some huge number. It was almost going to go for 1,000. Anyway, do we have Professor Carl?
You do.
How are you, and bud? Are you going to follow your man, Trump, and going out to buy a Tesla today to help out Elon?
Oh, good God, no. I've said it a few times on this show.
But you want to help the guy out. We're talking about helping the guy out. We're not talking about being a good buy or not.
No, I'm talking about the car sucks.
Yeah, well, I'm saying it doesn't matter. You're helping out.
I'm one of those funny people that when I buy something and I have some kind of competitive choice, it's because I like the thing I'm buying.
You don't want to help him, is what you're telling me.
It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that I think his car sucks.
Oh, all right, well.
I'll be fair. I own a Starlink Mini.
Really?
I bought it. I paid with money for it, right? I mean,
what's a Starlink Mini?
Well, so, you know, the Starlink is the internet dish that is, it's a flat panel, it's phased array, so unlike the Hughes thing, you don't have to, you do have to aim it, but it tells, it's got a little, you know, part of the app tells you if it's lined up correctly, right?
Okay.
And it tracks satellites itself, it switches between them instead of being geostationary, but the Mini version... The full-size one that people have at their house, you can use it when you're on the road. Okay, you could. But the power requirement is, for somebody that's off-grid, is pretty extreme. It draws close to 100 watts. And so, and also the voltage that it takes is kind of weird. It's like a 53-volt supply. So, I mean,
really? That's weird.
Well, so there's things you could do. You could do it. I mean, the whole reason to run a little bit higher voltage than a lot of people otherwise would is that you need this many watts. The higher the voltage, the less the current, therefore the smaller the wire you need. Okay, so it's, you know, the wire is of a smaller gauge, and on top of that, the connectors pass fewer amps.
Speaking of which, having never taken anything apart when I was in Europe, what gauge wire do they use when they use 220?
It's half the amp. It's half the same appliance draws half the amps.
But here we use either 12 or 14. Can they get away with like a 16?
I'd have to look the tables up. But it's it's half the amperage. So I mean, I would assume that you know, what we would have is a 30 amp circuit is a 15 amp circuit over there, because it's, you know, it's half the amps and twice the volts. But the mini is a smaller version of the Starlink dish. It can be run on a USB-C PD connection, although it says it needs 100 watt capability, and you'd think not looking at the app when you're using it, because it's sitting there at like 20 or 25 watts, and you're like, oh, well, I could use like a 60, which is really common and easy to get, because that's also what a lot of laptops, smaller laptops, charge off of. So like my, you know, my X1 Carbon will charge off that. And you'd be wrong, because as soon as you put it under heavy load, it tries to get 100, well, it tries to get more than 60 anyway, and can't, and resets, which needless to say, you know, screws you for a couple minutes, right, until it comes back up. So you really do need the 100. But the nice thing about it is that if you travel in places where there is no cell service, so if you like to go into the boondocks, this thing is just, it's a game changer.
How many places we have left that have zero? All cell service?
Well, that depends. All right. I mean, I'm, you know, my daughter, she, you know, she lives in her camper van part of the year. It's just part of her thing. She works from remote, so she can do that. But prior to the Starlink Mini, she had a little, you know, she still has it. It's a little box that works off the mobile network that gives you unlimited data. It's that, you know, usually on your phone you have like 5 gigabytes and then they throttle you. Okay, so I mean, you can, you know, you can tether your laptop, but after a little while it slows it down enough that you couldn't use it for remote work. But she's got a box that doesn't have that problem. The issue with it is that obviously you have to have a good signal or it doesn't work well or at all. Well, if you're sitting out in the middle of Moab, you've got nothing. All right, well, so before that, she wants to work, she has to drive into town and, you know, find a convenient place to park and, you know, do her shift in town, right, because there's a signal, or at least somewhere where there's, you know, where she's got a signal. With the Starlink, she could sit out in the middle of BF nowhere with, you know, the only thing around her is cows. And you know, stick that sucker in the dash, you know, up on the dashboard, and she's all good.
So. Well, what do you make of what's going on with the market? It's so interesting, Carl. I talked to a lot of people, and it's stunning that virtually every investment advisor that just charges a big fee and doesn't do anything for you, just puts it in, you know, big cap Bob and mid cap Mike stuff. Every one of them is telling you, hang on, it always comes back. And
well, of course they're saying that.
Well. Thing of it is, and to certain people, I would say that too as well. If I knew the person, I mean, if you're making 150 grand a year and the wife's making 150 grand a year and you got 40 grand in your account, what's the point, right? I mean,
well, it depends on. I mean, it depends on where you are, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, but the other thing is that yes, in the modern era. Okay, these kinds of wipeouts, if they, you know, if this turns into a wipeout as opposed to a dip, you know, in 5 years they do all come back, right?
Well, sometimes way quicker than that.
Well, yeah, sometimes they come back
but that's the experience, and you know, it's so bizarre. And I mean, I can't believe I started so long ago.
How did it work in 1930?
Well, I mean, it didn't work in 1967 either. It didn't come out of
well,
it.
That's, well, that's right. And the problem is, it could be 10 or 15 years.
Yeah,
right?
Well, but we haven't. There's no collective, unless you started when I did, there's no collective knowledge of that.
Well, I understand that, but here's the basic. So there's a lot of reasons to believe that, you know, the infamous saying, this time it's different, right? That is in fact the case here, and a huge part of it is just simply where the valuations are. It doesn't have anything to do with anything else. Okay, it's just simply where are the valuations. And the problem that we have right now is that anything that's done to address the crazy levels of deficit spending, which are insane, all right, anything that's done that addresses that in a realistic way is going to whack asset values. because you're going to have to bring the arbitrage out of the system that led to them in the first place. So if you, you know, like this whole tariff spat with Canada and Mexico, okay, and China, for that matter, one of the things that astounds me is I started looking into this whole thing with Canada, because when I wrote Leverage, one of the main points I made about stabilizing the American economic situation in general is that we had to address the trade balance, and you can't lose a trade war if you're the guy with the trade deficit. It's not possible mathematically for you to lose it. You have to be willing to maintain it, and that doesn't mean you aren't going to have economic consequences in your country. You are. Okay, and they might be quite serious while the rebalancing takes place. But numerically, you cannot lose. All right, so there's now, if you're incapable of autarky, in other words, taking care of yourself, then you got problems. But we're not, America's not in that situation. So, you know, when this all started, I took a look at this. I'm like, okay, is there a basis for the garfing about the, you know, the Canadian situation? Or is this, you know, is this really political about the, you know, okay, we got fentanyl coming in, the precursors are coming from China. We know this. These are facts. And some percentage of that is coming through Canada. The majority of it, the vast majority of it is coming through Mexico.
So the years on Michael Chase said on...
some of it...
Did you hear
some
that? What he said about the Canada... amount.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, but again, I mean, is this whole thing a pretext, right? Is basically what I, you know, was trying to dig into. That's what I'm looking for. And so one of the things I found, though, was that there are a couple of circumstances. These are things that go into cars. And, of course, you know, Detroit's Motor City, right? Always has been. So you have several situations there where a plant takes a coil of steel in America, stamps a part, it goes in a truck, it goes across the Ambassador Bridge into Windsor. It gets aggregated with another part, goes back on the truck, comes back across the U.S.-Canadian border, and that subassembly ends up going into a vehicle. Okay? Now, if you think about that, that's illogical. That's absolutely illogical. If you are the company that does the subassembly piece of this job, you would be out of your mind not to put that thing, that place, somewhere between on the road, on the freeway, somewhere between the stamping plant and the car assembly plant. You'd be nuts to put it across an international border. All right, but
well, I don't know if it's happening so much with those kinds of parts. But if it's a transmission or a motor, you might not want a motor. Motor assembly is a big deal.
Well, but Chief, what I'm saying is that this is these are subassemblies like a subframe with a steering rack on it,
right.
Okay, or something like this, right? And the thing is that there are several instances of this that are going on. Literally on a daily basis. I mean, this is the
production.
Well,
we did have something called the North American Free Trade Agreement that somebody might have actually read.
I get that, Chief, but here's the thing. Economics is full of externalities, right? But when you see something that doesn't make sense without an externality, the externality's there. You just don't know what it is, all right?
All right.
Because nobody throws money down the toilet and flushes it on purpose. So there is a reason that this flow is happening. And the reason is an externality, because it makes no logical sense to do this otherwise.
Well, it does. If you have a free trade agreement, it does.
No, it doesn't, because I'm still paying to load that thing on a truck and send it across the bridge twice, which has a toll, and it's not small for commercial vehicles either, and do this unless it is cheaper to do that in Canada. All right, so the difference in cost has to be large. It's the same reason that people offshore, you know, why do we have all of our T-shirts made in Bangladesh? Well, for the same reason.
Well,
labor costs 10 cents an hour.
I know a tad about, well, used to, if I've forgotten most. I know a tad about the manufacturing, well, railroad cars, planes,
yeah.
Big difference. But Pullman had a huge ability to make a lot of these parts.
Yeah.
Yet there was always somebody, because the machines to make them get a little bit more and more specialized.
Yeah, yeah.
There was somebody, always somebody that could say, look, take the hood part, for instance. We have a machine, we can stamp that for you, and oh, by the way, we'll do that, we'll do the trunk, and we'll do one of the sides. We're not interested in doing the frame or the other stuff, but for these particular things, we're pretty damn good at it. And oh, by the way, internally, it's going to cost you $100 a part, we can sell it to you for $90. It happens all the time.
Chief, I understand that. I'm just saying that the premise that this somehow is across an international boundary with several external costs that are imposed by crossing that, even without tariffs. Okay, leave tariffs out of it. No tariffs. It's illogical. And it is occurring in several cases, which tells me there's a labor component or there is some other cost component to doing this sub-assembly in Windsor as opposed to in Detroit.
You know,
I don't know what it is.
You could make the same argument about the Skyway, since the thing is going up so much.
Okay, and what happened with the Skyway? The Skyway used to be reasonably cheap to go across. Right. Now it's stupid, right?
Right.
But the thing is, would you intentionally put a factory on the wrong end of the Skyway?
No, unless you want the guy going down Indianapolis Boulevard and not paying the toll, which maybe you do.
Well, in this case, there isn't a way to avoid the toll because there's a river in the way. All right. So that's the thing, is that I look at those situations. I mean, if you try to go around, you go to the Blue Water Bridge, well, guess what? You pay the toll there too, right?
Yeah.
And it's not a short detour either. So I see these kinds of things. And what it says to me is that despite the so-called free trade agreement, which, if we have one with a nation, it should be predicated upon wage and environmental parity, is close enough, just like peering in the internet world. I don't charge you to exchange traffic with me because we both get enough value from having that exchange in place, and it's close enough to parity that it's not worth either of us figuring out how to invoice it. All right? If that's not true, then one of us is going to charge the other guy. All right, but as long as it is true, then nobody does that. And in a free market, in an open competitive market, this sorts itself out in that kind of a way. Well, in a market where you allow arbitrage to go on, then you get two things out of that. One is your asset prices go up, stocks, because the exploitation inures to the benefit of the company doing it. That makes their profit margin go up, which means their stock price goes up. Okay, it's fairly basic stuff.
Or the executives get huge bonuses and the stock price doesn't go up.
Well, or both.
Yeah.
Okay, in some cases the executives steal all the money. But, you know, one way or another, this tends to happen. And so when I see evidence of those kinds of externalities, I say, hey, wait a minute, there's something going on here. Now, I don't know what it is. And like I said, I don't have any way to dig into the internals of Canada's economy at a level that's sufficient for me to identify why it's happening. All right, so I don't know why it's happening. All I know is that the marker is there that says that there is an issue here. And
I don't think that the people who are doing this have anywhere near the depth of knowledge of how complicated this is that you're talking about.
You and I are both
talking about that. I have a real concern with that. I mean, there's
Chief, no, I think you're right. But here's, you know, you're right about that when you're talking about, like, you know, Trump, right? You're absolutely correct. But the people in the executive offices of the company that are doing it know damn well why they're doing it.
Well, but I mean, this is. I need you for 7 minutes on the market. So let's just we'll take this apart on Friday.
That's the point I'm trying to get.
What I'm saying is you've got some places you're just going to have a natural, quote, trade deficit with, because if somebody has all the ice in the world, they're going to be able to give you ice cheaper than you can do it yourself. You're going to have an ice trade deficit. Canada has a boatload more trees than we do per person. There's a natural movement of lumber from there to here. There's no way you can compete necessarily with that, but then on the other side of the coin, there's something we do better than they do that they don't even want to come close to it. That's the whole bizarre part about this auto thing, is their Chevys and Fords. They're not the Canada mobile. It's what makes this thing so crazy.
Well, yes. However, remember that we were also told when it came to the Mexican situation, and this and all the Friedman acolytes all preached that this was going to happen, that the $30 an hour that the guys were making as UAW members in Detroit would end up essentially transporting itself to Mexico. And as a result, those people would make the $30 an hour in Mexico. This, in turn, would mean that they could buy the Fords or the Chevys.
Or something else. We're developing customers.
Right, but we're basically that by doing this, we are increasing the customer base, okay, and we're not destroying the wages of American workers or destroying the jobs entirely because they're $10 an hour down there. Well, guess what? All the Friedman acolytes were wrong.
By the way, I'm one of them, and I used to sit in class and listen to it.
Well, I'm just saying that all of that economic theory stuff.
Okay, well,
was,
all right. Now, why
wrong.
Why were they wrong?
Because the premise that this kind of open trade arrangement would lead to political change that forced the corruption out of the Mexican environment was false.
They looked at the Friedmanites, and I guess I am one. They looked at, and by the way, I agree with you that this did not work out right. Sure as hell didn't in China.
No, it didn't work out in China. It didn't work out in Mexico
either. Their frame of reference was the Euro-American experience.
I understand.
And they thought if you introduced economic freedom, it would essentially trump the political environment to where it would get you some modicum of political freedom, and the same people couldn't steal the stuff forever.
And it didn't happen.
And they misunderstood the power of the Communist Party, essentially, in China.
Well, but they also misunderstood the power of the corruption in Mexico, too.
Right.
Which is essentially the same thing. It's just got a different form.
And I think they also... We could go into this. Boy, we'd have to have some labor guy on here. The oligarchs almost won here versus unions and labor and so forth, but there was a lot of economic issues. I mean, in terms of people, and people had I don't know how I can even say this, Carl, but there was enough competition for labor here that one of the reasons why the unions won is because they had the supply, the demand and supply on their side.
Right.
And you're not going to get that in China.
No, well, you're not going to get that in China, but you also have, you, and unfortunately, to a large degree, you have this problem with Mexico, but it's embedded with the drug gangs. And the problems that has when it gets intertwined into the government. And you know what? We're not innocent in this kind of a way. You only have to look at what happened with the CIA and Iran-Contra and all this kind of nonsense, right?
But you don't have to go outside the country. I mean George Pullman hired the Pinkertons and everybody else to shoot union workers, for God's sake.
Well, yes, exactly. So I mean, this is the history of this. We don't teach history in school anymore, unfortunately.
This is something that you absolutely should teach to people.
Chief, you and I learned it. Okay, but my daughter, we did a couple of segments that are going to post in the next couple of weeks on the Ukraine situation and some of this stuff, and she learned exactly zero of the historical underlying stuff on the ground 1,000 years prior when she was in school.
Nobody read The Jungle.
Well, but no wonder. And I mean, in the U.S. context, nobody reads The Jungle anymore, right? I did. It was one of my assignments in class. So I mean, we grew up in a different time. Today, this is just not part of the experience, right?
And Next time you're here on the way to a Southside bar, I'll drive you by the church that used to keep the people in the sanctuary, so the companies couldn't go in and get the union leaders. They used to sleep in the basement of the church.
Yeah, I mean, but this kind of stuff, dude, you ask anybody under the age of 30 about this stuff, and they do not know
idea
about it.
Even our man Lou, who's Mr., whatever, when it comes to labor,
but
he said, there's no way that the coal miners in West Virginia didn't have to revolt. I mean,
absolutely. But all right. So in the context of the market, assuming that that any of this stuff bears fruit and it's not just a stage show, okay? And we had an example of a stage show yesterday, which as I dug into it a little bit more, now I'm a little angry about it.
Well, it's not a stage show in Tesla. It's down 200 and some points.
Well, I understand that. But, okay, so, you know, one of the arguments yesterday was that X was under attack, supposedly from Ukraine. Okay, now this was what was put on Fox Business. Okay, Elon came out and said this attack came from Ukraine. Well, guess what? Last night, a group of people that are largely, they're essentially Palestinian activists. They're pissed off about the Palestinians, and they're not in the U.S. They're outside the United States. They took credit for it. Now, one of those two things is false.
Yeah.
and what I pointed out is that if, in fact, now I just dealt with a similar situation with my system. I had a very aggressive web crawler. I'm assuming they were trying to train an AI. And, you know, my site was one of, you know, thousands that was targeted. And it was coming from Alibaba's cloud services over in China. And my system identified this, where it was coming from, and I'm not going to bother trying to deal with, you know, get the Chinese to arrest somebody for, you know, for doing destructive.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that, right? And I don't have the ability to drone somebody over there. So since I can't do those two things, I did the easy thing. I identified all of the IP blocks that Alibaba's cloud services uses, and I blackballed all of them. Instantaneously, the problem solved. Okay.
Really?
Now,
hey, we got to dash here, but we're piling into Joel's time. Is Joel on, Ricky?
No, he's not up yet.
Well, when he comes up, on Friday, I definitely, unless you're back on, I assume we'll have Kenny today. I want to talk to you about what I do for a living and how somebody who comes in now wants to protect themselves, and instead of doing this 3 months ago when the VIX was 12, now it's 27. The price of insurance is to the moon. That's when you really, I mean, I try not to push, you know, what I do that much, Carl, because it's different from the show. But the fact is, if you don't have somebody that you can sit down and go over what your needs are, your risks are, and decide what, if any, insurance or what you should be doing in your account right now. I mean, if you're 82 years old, just balls out long, and all the stuff you've been in forever, and you're now down a bunch of money, and you're wondering what to do, if you don't have somebody you can talk to about it, don't just listen to the guys on TV that get paid a percent and a half for doing nothing for you.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You can't do that. And you know what? It's a real tough conversation to have because...
Oh, it's
because, I mean, we're down this low. The last thing you want to do is buy an awful lot of real expensive puts the day we reach the bottom.
I was going to say, I don't want to buy puts when I'm paying double for them, right?
Well, except what if you're 85 and you have no income whatsoever except your portfolio?
Well, I get that.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's the thing. If you're out, if you've gotten that far out over your skis because you bought into the rah-rah, you got problems.
Well, yeah.
Okay? And you know, I mean, I make some money, right? But, you know, I've got a decent stash of cash. And guess what? It's right now, with the exception of a few things, I've got some speculative plays on that are single company that are not coupled to what the indices do. But for the most part, I've been getting real wary up here, right? Because I'm like, you know, hey, this is, this is looking kind of bad. And then, you know, there's some indicators that I watch at things like this. But I'm also seeing the macroeconomic deterioration. And we saw some of that in the jobs report this last week.
We've been seeing it, Carl. You and I have been seeing it everywhere forever. Kevin's with us.
I know. And you know what? And the markets ignored it forever.
Yeah, exactly right.
Right? And guess what? That is exactly how you get really big drawdowns.
Well, here's two issues right out of the... And again, this is a long Friday conversation. Two things, like for people that I have, and my guys are, in better shape than most. Matter of fact, a lot better shape. We have people in T-bills now for a year. We're you know, half the money's in the market protected, the other half's in T-bills.
Well, because it's making 4.5 or 5.
All right, well, okay, but my point is, it's we elected 6 months or a year ago for new clients not to put everything in.
Right.
Which is, you know, for a while didn't bear some fruit, but now it is. not Pearson-proven, ended up being the right thing to do. Question number one, at what level do you start drawing some of that out and engaging the market, maybe still protected? The other is, that's kind of question number one. That's a tough one. And if Ariel says it's not tough, guess what? It's tough because everybody has a different risk parameter. Everybody's different, right?
Absolutely.
The other thing is, and I'll look at the Qs. We're up 280 here today. We're down God knows how much yesterday, like 20 or something. The Qs are at 475. Now, because the VIX is here, if you want to just put money in the Qs and buy the 475 puts, guess what? You're paying through the nose. Now, yep. At some point, one way you can deal with that is to buy a put spread. In other words, is to ensure a piece of the downside, which has all the dangers with that. So suppose we might say, man, you know what? I think the Qs only have another 50 points to go at worst. Now, where I get that knowledge, God only knows, picked it out of my behind. But if that's what at some point when things are down low enough, you may make that change in your thinking. I mean, clearly, if it was at 275, you and I might say, 275, 225 put spread might be good enough. We might.
Right.
I'm not saying we will or we won't, but now again, that depends on the person.
Right.
If the person is, the account is not that big regard to the rest of their stuff, their real estate holding, whatever it happens to be, you might cross over into that genre and say, I'm going to, because what happens is you're buying a very expensive put, but you're also selling a very expensive put. So the price of the spread, you can cut some of that increased implied volatility out of it, correct?
Some.
So, well, usually most.
A decent amount.
Yeah.
Right.
So in other words, if the price of the put at a 27 is going to be a lot higher than it is at 12, the price of the spread at 27 is not that much higher than it was when it was 13.
Right.
It is higher, yes. So now, these seem, if you're on TV, just give me the dough and don't worry about it, they seem like they're easy questions. When you're talking about a real person, they're not.
They're not easy questions.
They're not easy questions. And if you're talking to somebody or not talking to somebody that has no idea what I'm talking about, you're at the wrong place. I'm sorry.
Yep.
And I can't handle everybody, but I mean, this is crazy. By the way, do you know who invented the term economic externality? I think you probably do.
No.
He just croaked, by the way, like age 99 or something.
Oh, really?
A guy by the name of Ronald Coase. I have the paper.
Okay.
And you know what? It was a very simple economic paper. But it covered all the bases. It had to do with, I mean, the guy was older than sin, and he's dead for a while. Not that 97 is, you know, bad. I'd like to see us at that age, Carl, still healthy, but I don't know if that's going to happen. But he looked at a town in Britain, a sleepy little town, a little farm town, you know, had their sheep and all the other stuff he had, and all of a sudden they put a factory there. And everybody loved the idea that everybody went to the factory, they now had a job, but the factory was belching some smoke. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, we're not talking about people getting lung cancer and didn't get anywhere near that detail. But this was an era before they had paint. So you used to whitewash your house and your fence.
Right, right.
And people used to have to whitewash their house every 5 years.
Right.
Well, as soon as the factory came in, everybody had to do it because there was this particulate matter in the air, meaning soot.
Yeah.
Everybody had to whitewash their fence every 3 years. So the extra cost of the whitewash and the labor that the factory was able to push on to the rest of the community and they didn't absorb is called an economic externality. You get to push a cost on somebody else. You dirty the river, everybody else has to pay to clean it up. That sort of thing.
Right.
And it's a when you look at it very simply like that, it's very clear. If you try and complicate it before you understand it, then it's not so clear, right?
Right, exactly. Well, but everybody wants to complicate it when it's not them.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Right, because nobody wants to say, well, guess what, I screwed you.
Right, I think we have Joel. Why don't you hang for a bit and see if Kenny comes in. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Chief, good morning. Got a little bit of a fast market going on here
today.
Whoa,
imagine that, huh?
Jeez, boy, oh boy, yeah. Oh boy, Chief.
What do you
volatility galore.
Yeah, what do you make of these prices? I mean, I was... Yeah, the what was the straddle with hour to go yesterday? Like 5 hours or something?
Oh boy, oh boy. Option guys, I mean, this is just really should I say wilder markets than COVID?
I think they are.
I think the machines are even more fine tuned to create the volatility. I think that we're trading just at higher numbers, right? When we had to sell off during COVID, what, we were 2,000-3,000 the S&P. Now we're almost double that. I think you just got to buckle your seatbelt here and see what happens. I mean, we got some inflation numbers coming out on Wednesday and Thursday, and the last thing we can we need right now is a whiff of inflation. I mean, we already have inflation, but a tick up, and I don't even know if it's going to matter when you get into this kind of environment.
Well, I'll whisper the term stagflation. You don't even want to say that, right?
Yeah, I know. I know.
It's like going to the driving range and yelling shank. Same thing.
You know, Chief, you have, and I think I've been saying this for the last couple of weeks, thanks to Blue Putnam, former chief economist at the CME. I mean, you cut jobs, right? That's recessionary. You reduce spending. That's, recessionary. And you increase tariffs, and that's inflation. I mean, 0-for-3, the market cannot withstand. And then if you want to throw in another fourth thing, market's trading at the highest valuations that we've traded at in a long time. So momentum traders, hey, they don't want to buy these stocks anymore. No way. Now you got the momentum traders on the downside. And as my buddy Dennis, a co-host in the show with me, we're the value investors. They're like, they're still not buying these stocks. They're like, no. I'm way down here.
Well, plus,
so,
you have to deal with
what a quandary.
You have to deal with the idea that the market. I mean, this is the. I'm not saying anything bad about these particular stocks, the seven here, but if you look at the five that were the cat's ass basically in 2000, up until 4 or 5 years ago, three or four of them weren't even trading the price they did in 2000. So the market may come back. It doesn't mean that Tesla's going to come back, or it doesn't mean that Google or Meta, or I happen to think those are pretty good companies, but it doesn't mean that the stock you have is going to be the one that comes back, right?
Oh, we know that.
Yeah.
We know that.
I mean, I got Tesla, it's still at 100 and some PE, even down here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it's, I don't give investment advice, but if you look at the numbers, I'm not so sure. You have to sit there and go, give me my last penny, I'm putting it in Tesla. You know what you and I both missed, which I'm surprised, because we don't usually miss this, that in January of 25, we had a new record on margin interest. What, did that creep up on us or what?
No, I didn't see that.
We're exact same number we were in October of 21, which is right in the middle of the COVID, was $935 billion, and now it's $937. It's the first time it's going above the COVID number in the end of January. I did not see that. Because whenever that number gets really high, usually there's a problem if the market goes down, right?
Yeah. I think you saw some margin selling. I mean, I don't know what happened at 10 o'clock last night. I wasn't paying attention. You had a major dip. And, people come up with these, I'm not a big Fibonacci guy. I'm definitely not a, CMT. But I like to see, a double bottom or something where at least the buyers are stepping up. And then after you see that, that's not good enough. I like to see things calm down. And I don't know, a couple days of calming down.
Well, when I went to bed last night, the spoos were down. And when did they come? When did they come back?
They went down at 10 o'clock. They took out yesterday's low at 10 o'clock
last night,
and then they just been chugging. So, I don't know if someone said something negative somewhere, or, the Fed, what do they call it? The plunge protection team came in from the Fed, and it boosted us up here. But, boy, oh, boy.
Well, we have this amazing inconsistency in the news, at least. I'm not going to say it was better, but when you had the COVID, once the COVID was here, you didn't have somebody running out and saying we got a cure the next minute. We're I mean, nobody, we have been very reluctant. I mean, normally we just keep adjusting, and we've been very reluctant to lay out any calls as expensive as they are, because all it's going to take is one, oh, okay, we're forgetting all about terrorists, we're all big happy family again. You know, we could go flying back up. I'm not predicting that. Or we could just be in, like you say, the fundamentals could have taken over. And we're talking about with Carl, people being laid off. You just mentioned it. I mean, some of this stuff, I don't want to talk to politics, but I was reading something, hearing about the, what is this farm program where all these projects that the farmers do for land management and things like that, where they put their own money out and then the government reimburses them. You know, I don't really know that much about that. My brother probably does. Evidently, they're freezing all those payments to those guys. Well, Jesus.
Last time I
checked, every single one of those dudes is probably a Trump voter. What's the guy doing to himself? I mean, how do you do that when those are your people? Nobody care anymore or what? I can't, this is like I'm watching Bizarre World. Like it's like I'm going to wake up and it was all a nightmare. This is stuff I can't even imagine.
I try to stay with.
I do too, but you look at it and go, this isn't really happening. there's this liberal dude, I know, I don't usually listen to him, but he's interviewing all these people from the government that got laid off and said, I voted for the guy three times. I mean, now he cans my ass. Jesus.
Yep. All right, Chief. I'll just leave you. You know, just today. I mean, I don't even care if we end up green today. I just like us to see. You know, hold those lows. You know, get a bounce. I think people are going to be. I think it's going to be a tepid rally. I think that there's some people that, you know, this is different. Because a lot of people tried to buy the dip, and they didn't. So,
well, they did, and they're wounded.
And they're wounded, exactly, Chief. So we didn't have a chance to go into the Michigan basketball debacle, so maybe next Tuesday.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to remind you of the Michigan State game the other night. I didn't want to do that to you.
Yeah, I don't want to go into the politics of it. I'll get too many hate tweets. So we will talk about that next week. As always, thanks for having me.
Wait, final question. If it doesn't hold today, you're my technical guy. What does that tell you?
Man, I don't even want to start talking about a 50% retracement. From the COVID move, because that would take you like to 4,500. But, you know, we're 146 handles away. Nice psychological number, like 5,000 in the S&P. So I'm not going to go out with some wild prediction.
No, don't.
Like
I'm just saying.
43, 40. Yep. I'm looking at 5,000. 5,000, just under 5,000, takes you back to January of 24.
That's when I tell my people, get out of the T-bills, let's get back in the market.
All right. Well, you let me know when, right, Chief. I'll be there. I got plenty of cash, so you let me know.
All right, buddy. Do we have Kenny, Ricky?
Yes, we do.
Hey, Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I was anxious to talk to you today. What do you make of this? Were you the guys who reversed your short spoon position last night at 10 o'clock and turned this market?
So listen, we've been talking about this. We've been prepared and we've been talking about a correction and a pullback. It had to happen. It hasn't happened in a while. You just needed a catalyst to get it going. And I think, you know, you got a bunch of those catalysts kind of hitting the headlines all at the same time, not including, I think, Maria Bartiromo's interview with Trump on Sunday on Sunday Morning Futures, where she asked him directly what he thought, you know, about a coming recession, and he was, you know, a little bit antsy about predicting it. I understand you don't ever want to predict it, or you can't predict it. He's not necessarily an economic analyst, but I think that hesitancy was just another headline that was perceived as negative on top of all the other headlines. And people at the moment, you know, when the tone gets negative and people get antsy, they're going to focus on anything they can that's negative. They're going to accentuate the negative and eliminate the positives, right? Which is the opposite of what most people do all the time, accentuating the positive, eliminating the negative. But right now, it's antsy enough that it was just enough to send the VIX higher and to cause the nervousness, and you saw what you saw. Now, you know, at one point yesterday, it kind of felt like they were getting ready to throw it all out the window, including the kitchen sink. And while you know, the market suffered and it was ugly. I think we're going to continue to see the markets thrash around and test a little bit lower. Look, yesterday we saw three century marks in the S&P. We started the day in the 5700s. We blasted right through 5600. We traded down to 5564 before we rallied into the end of the day, taking us back into the 5600 century. Overnight, again, we tested again that low as you just identified. And then traded higher. This morning, futures are trying to push higher. But look, I would not be surprised. You have to keep that number now, 5564, as the number to watch, right? I believe we're going to test it again. I wouldn't be surprised if it happened today. Maybe it doesn't, but I wouldn't. It's going to happen in relatively soon if it doesn't happen today. And I'm thinking, you know, 55. I thought 5600 was going to hold, but that clearly blasted right through. So the next target for me is 55 and a quarter, 5500. I know there are people out there, and he just said it. There are some people out there with a 4500 target on their back, which, you know, I think that's a little bit dramatic. But if it continues to get anxious and continues to talk about, you know, really negative, the GDP, Atlanta GDP is now calling for negative 2.5%.
Yeah, I saw that. Actually, it's up a couple of ticks or something. It was lower than that a couple of days ago.
Yeah, but we're going from 2.3, which was in the fourth quarter, positive, plus 2.3, to negative 1.5, to now suddenly negative 2.5. Those kinds of headlines, you know, are perfect for creating the anxiety that we're seeing. And that causes people to go, you know what? They're going to shoot first and ask questions later. Certainly the algos do that because the algos have absolutely zero emotion, right? That's part of what the issue is. They're programmed to be emotionless. They react just to, you know, data or technical breaks, whether they're positive or negative in the market, and they feed on each other, right? Technical breaks on the downside can fuel more selling from the algos. And that's kind of what you saw across everything, right, in terms of stocks. Certainly money went into bonds, money went into gold, money went into the contra trades, right, the VIXI and the SPSX and the other contra trades. They went into some went into cash. Look, some went into utilities. Utilities were up 1.2% yesterday. Energy was up 0.5% yesterday when the market was getting crushed. And what does that tell you? That tells you is that money's moving into, I hate to say it, those boring utility stocks that are typically good dividend payers. They're kind of solid. They're boring. There's nothing sexy about them, but it gives people equity exposure, you know, but very conservative equity exposure. You saw it. Yeah, saw it happen in names like, you know, Johnson & Johnson and Verizon. Verizon was up 1%.
Yeah, those things have been up huge.
Right, exactly.
And banks are getting murdered. I can't figure that out.
Yeah, well, I can't. What did you say, banks?
Yeah, they're getting clobbered. I can't.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not necessarily sure what that's all about. I think they're just getting dragged down with the kind of the anxiety. But I think those will bounce sooner than maybe the rest of the market. But look, I'm not necessarily surprised. Does it hurt when stocks go down? Because of course it does. Does it feel uncomfortable? Absolutely, it does. But it doesn't mean that it's over. Once again, it comes down to knowing what you own and why you own it. And if you own crap, then you have every reason to say, oh my God, I got to get out. If you own a well-diversified, large-cap portfolio, then and you're a long-term investor, this is just part of the cycle. You know it. I know it. Investors are getting to get more comfortable with it. And actually, this chaos presents a great opportunity, right, in terms of
okay. What do you make of, I'm springing this on you because I usually check on this and I haven't in a long time. I had not realized at the end of January we tapped record margin interest. Did you? Do you keep track of this?
Record margin interest.
Record margin debt.
Yeah, no, I saw that. And that's another reason, right? Certainly people have margin loans out there and then stocks get crushed and they get margin calls and they're forced then to sell things that maybe they didn't want to sell, but they're forced to sell it because they have to pay the margin debt, right?
We're up $120 billion since October.
Yeah.
I would never have guessed that.
Well, I wouldn't have guessed it, but I'm not necessarily surprised because once again, is that, you know, people make money in the markets and they feel good and oh my God, look at Nvidia, look at Palantir, and you know the party's never going to end, and they borrow against it to buy more, and then they get, you know, and then when the sentiment changes, and you and I know how fast you can see it.
How much of Mrs. Weird Stuff, because I noticed is I'll use the term, affecting our vision here. Yeah. You know, it's whatever. I don't want to. We got a guy in the White House that keeps talking about. Doesn't he realize that an awful lot of people remember that, like, he was just there? And his, he seems like it's almost like he's a different person. The first 4 years, all everybody cared about, and all he cared about, not all, was that the market was his report card. And all every time the market was up, he'd say, "Look what a great job I'm doing. The market's up."
Right.
So when
right.
I mean, so when you have a day like yesterday, and basically the market's getting its ass kicked. I mean, we're sitting there going, "We don't want to sell any calls here." This guy, the guy who we used to know as Donald Trump, is going to look at this and say, I can't have these people doing this on my watch. They're going to blame me. That he'll reverse everything he did by 4 o'clock, and we're going to be up the same amount today, and the last thing you're going to do is be chasing a call option. And yet, all of a sudden he goes, I'm not worried about the market anymore. I'm going, is this the same guy? What the hell? What am I missing here?
I don't think you're missing anything. I think, you know, it's the conversation that fits the narrative at the moment, right? I think the difference between the conversation from, you know, 4 years ago or when he was first president till today is that there's a different focus, right? Now they're talking about renegotiating trade agreements around the world. They're talking about massive waste. They're talking about, you know, getting us. Scott Bessent said it perfect the other day. He said we have to detox off of all this reckless government spending. And is it, we all know it has to stop. How many times do we talk about it? We're all sitting here saying it's out of control. Okay, great. So now they're trying to put it in control, and so you have these other reactions, which I'm not necessarily surprised at all. And like I said, while it's uncomfortable, I own, and my clients own, and your clients own, quality names that, you know, are going to go through the cycle, but they're going to bounce back once this settles down. Now, when's it going to settle down is a different question. How much lower are we going to test is a different question. You know, like I said, I thought 5,600 was a level that would hold. Well, we sliced right through it. And I think we sliced right through it partly because, you know, it's all very algorithmic trading. And again, the algos have no emotion. They have no sense. They just do what they're programmed to do. So if sell is what they're told to do, they just sell. And things become oversold, and we'll get the bounce. And the bounce doesn't, and today we might get that bounce, but it doesn't feel like a strong bounce. You know,
what does it say to you? What if we pull a rug out of today?
Well, we may. You know, this may be a dead cat bounce, and suddenly we test lower again. 55.64 again is yesterday's low. That's going to be the number to watch. If we pierce that, then we're going right down to 5,500 without, in a blink of an eye, you're going to go right to 5,500. If we don't hold yesterday's low, so that's going to, you know, you have to watch that today. So while you know, I've been emailing clients today because they're going, you know, should we buy? I said yes, we're taking approach, a very cautious approach. We're going to start to buy some, but I'm not going all in down here because I think there's more to go. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't take advantage, because if by chance it turns around and it finds some steady and it starts to go higher, you know, you want to at least have taken some advantage.
Two hard questions, I think, but from certainly from what we do here. So if I can get some advice, I'm always willing to take it, Kenny. You know, if you don't listen to other people, boy, I just think you got it all figured out yourself. That's a recipe for disaster, isn't it? We have a lot of people here, especially clients I've gotten in the last year or two, when they were a little concerned about the market, and me too, and you too. We've all been kind of, you three. Yep. We've got a lot of money in T-bills for a lot of people. Now, different ages, different people, different amounts. You know, I mean, it's not like we have this, you know, this formula, like we shove every round peg into the square hole. We don't do that. Actually, sometimes you could put a round peg in a square hole. You can't go the other way around, right? Anyway, where do we start dragging some of the money out of T-bills and putting it back in the market? That's kind of question one.
So that's exactly the question. When you do, how much lower do we go? Do you start to take, look, we've had a fairly decent correction. Look where the NASDAQ's trading now. Look, the S&P is now not in correction territory yet, but I think we're down 8% in the S&P.
Yeah.
But NASDAQ, the Russell, the transports are all in well into correction territory, almost in bear market territory, right? I don't think anything's in bear market yet, but I think it's right there. The Russell might be just kissing it, tapping on its door. I have to go back and look at the chart, but you know, there is this kind of flushing out. And I think at some point, depends on who your investor is. You know, the money that you have in T-bills, is it for someone who's 70 years old? I think you're more patient. If it's somebody who's 60 years old or 55 years old or 50 years old, I think you can start to take some of that money and start to find strategically stocks, big name stocks that have just been creamed for no other reason than the cycle and the nervousness, not because the thesis has necessarily changed. Look, I think AI, again, is going to continue to change the world. It's certainly coming under pressure because it had gotten way, way stretched. Again, you and I talked about it. But that doesn't mean that you toss your AI out the window. In fact, names here in NVIDIA, I think, are at levels now that look really, really attractive.
They are levels that are speculatively very attractive in terms of PE and what you're going to get. They're not so attractive. Because you end up with, I mean, you don't want AI to go the way of the cloud, where it became the thing everybody did, but where did anybody ever make any money on it? It became a commodity pretty damn quick.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But I think you have to, you know, as a part of your job and my job, is helping the investors, the people who you're responsible for, you're acting as a fiduciary for, you're acting as a, you know, an advisor for. I think you have to be very sensitive to A, who it is you're talking to, like which client you're talking to, before you just arbitrarily say, okay, now's the time to do it for everyone. It's not necessarily the time to do it for everyone, but it is the time. I think it absolutely is the time to start doing it for clients. You know, some more aggressive than others, but yes, I think we're getting to the point. Now, that doesn't mean we're not going lower. I think we are going to thrash a little bit lower. And like I said, I think it was RBC, Brian Westbury, who came out and said one of his models has a $4,500 target. And you know what? And your prior guest just said the same thing.
Yeah.
A 50% retracement takes you right to 4,500. That would be really, really uncomfortable and ugly.
Well, even if we put people in here, we're still going to have protection for them, and the protection price is high. Second question, Kenny, this one's probably tougher. Well, actually, they're all tough. If this was easy, they wouldn't need us, right? The second question is, I got the cues at, let's call it 476. Now, normally, depends on the person, so you never want to say anything on the air or you tell anybody what to do, because you're not talking to the person. You don't want to give advice, and B, you shouldn't. Okay, which doesn't... Everybody else does all day, but you and I are not going to do that. Let's put it that way. But somewhere along the line, Kenny, and I don't know where that is. Here's my question. Instead of buying, say, the 476 puts and insuring yourself, which leaves you with roughly a 50 delta position to the upside, right? You're going to say, you know what? It's down far enough. And we're paying through the nose for these puts. I just asked Carl the same question. Can the two of us put our heads together and not make an ass, as they say? We put our heads together and say, you know what? 425 is probably the worst that's going to happen here. Can we do the 475, 425 put spread, insure ourselves down to there, and that's good enough? Because you're buying a high volatility, you're selling a high volatility. I don't know that I'm comfortable there yet, Kenny. I don't know that I can pick a number right here where I can say we won't go below that. It's not like we're at 275. I mean, what do you think?
No, I agree with you. And we're not necessarily paid to pick specific numbers or to define exactly what's going to happen. No, who's going to really do that? Nobody's going to do it. But you have to have a sense, right? And I think both you and I have a sense, but you do. You try to do and then create the protection plan based on each client, based on kind of where you broadly then think it's going. I don't think it's impossible to do. But no one's got the complete insight into knowing exactly what's going to happen.
Take Tesla for an example. Okay, same thing. I mean, the thing's down from 460 on the tippy top to 227. Yep. It's up 564 this morning. If I were to say, Kenny, what's your, and again, this is a real dangerous question. What's your worst case in Tesla? What are you going to say? 175, 150, 100? I mean, I don't know. But if you say 175, and we want to protect your or my portfolio, maybe we can get away with the 225, 175 put spread. But if we're sitting there going, well, I don't know, this thing could go to 10, we don't want that, because we're only insuring part of the way, right?
Yeah. So hold on. So I'm just looking at this. Wow, this is really ugly.
Oh, yeah, this is but ugly.
Yeah, no, it's trading at 2, right, closed at 222 last night. So I'm just looking at the longer-term chart. Certainly, certainly, you know, could you, could we argue we could see this thing trade down to 182-ish, which would be a level we saw back in August of 24, where it seemed to kind of find some, you know, it had that was resistance for a long time earlier in the year. Then it broke up above it. Then it came back down. They found support, and then it did nothing but go straight up. So could we come right back down there and find support at 182? We could, and we most likely will. But if the narrative turns even more anxious and uglier, you know, will it blast right through that? For sure, I think it will blast right through that. And if this narrative with Musk now, what they're doing to him in terms of, you know, the fight against him because of his role in Doge, is that going to continue to kind of paint the negative picture on Tesla and that whole narrative? It might. I think that's dumb, though. I think the people that do that, that buy into that narrative because they're angry because he's involved with the government, I think that's a stupid reason to sell Tesla. Tesla's not just a car company. Tesla's a tech company. You and I both know that.
Well, you got the people in Canada now, and people. I mean, it is. I think these guys, and again, let's stay away from. We can't really stay away from the politics because it's dragging the market. The way these guys, and I'm not saying that government doesn't have inefficiency in it. You and I know that. But the way they've gone about it, they've managed, instead of having a some sort of a dialogue with Canada that didn't even realize 2 months ago they were an enemy, they all of a sudden can't stand those people. And the two people that are at the top of the... If there were pitchforks, it would be those two heads, him and Trump. He put himself, I mean, and the people in Canada, I can't believe what would happen if you pulled up to a saloon in Canada in your new Tesla today.
Well, no, I think right now that might be true. I think there's a lot. I think the narrative is very, very hot and anxious at the moment, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily make it. It's ridiculous. These people that are destroying Tesla cars and defaming them and scratching them up and crashing into them, I think it's ridiculous.
Well, I didn't hear any of that stuff. Where's that happening?
Oh my God, it's happening! It's happening. What is it? Mark Tepper on CNBC on Maria's show this morning just talked about it. He was supposed to get a new Tesla. He had ordered it. He got it. They called him up. They told him to come pick it up on Thursday afternoon. And then they called him Thursday morning and said, "You can't come. It was vandalized overnight, waiting to be."
Really? Oh, I didn't hear about any of that stuff. Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, it's hard. It's stupid.
Yeah.
That's just dumb. But I think that's where the narrative goes really off the rails. And that's when it becomes that you go, like, this is really stupid. These people are vandalizing the cars because they're angry at Tesla. That's just dumb. That's when you know it's really gone too far.
Well, you know what? It's gone. That's essentially what I was saying, though. Kenny, I went through all the numbers of, you know, and I, again, and Kevin's probably right. I don't know how many of the contractor employees there are in the government. I was looking at the government employee numbers. And now granted, Kevin says a lot of these people are being hired as outside contractors, so the numbers actually are inflated. It makes sense to me, but I also don't know. We've always had subcontractors in government, and I don't really know that we have more of them now than we did 20 years ago, but maybe we do.
No, I'm sure we do.
Well, I mean, that's the message. Okay, we're getting, but it does. I don't know how many. But my point is that if you look at the amount of government employees, the only group that ever dropped government people was Clinton and Gore. They got rid of 300,000 people, and every person since then, including Trump, has added back to the number to where we're almost back to the number when Clinton came in. I mean, I don't know how many people that have a huge opinion on this actually have ever looked at these numbers. I mean, why would you look at the facts when you get your own story, right? But now, I think that there's a lot of, especially on the border and places, there's these private companies that are doing this stuff. I know in Katrina and Bush's time, there were all kinds of subcontractors all over the damn place for that stuff. Now, can I put a number on which was worse or bigger? Does anybody keep track of the amount of subcontractors getting paid by government any given day? Is that number even around?
I think some people must keep.
I remember in the Katrina situation, they had some guy in Washington who was, of course, very connected to the Bushies. There are people connected to the Clintons and people connected to Obama. We know that. They're connected to Bushies where they got this huge contract to clean up part of the, what ward was that, the fifth ward or the fourth ward down there? And it was so lucrative, Kenny, they immediately offed it to somebody else who And then that person offed it to somebody else. And the people in New Orleans were guys in a truck with three illegal aliens with a broom and a shovel. It was like the fourth subcontractor down the line. I mean, that's you see that stuff, and it does wrinkle your chin, doesn't it? But it's hard for me to tell when it's better, when it's worse. I mean, how does anybody keep track of that stuff?
100%. But there are people that keep track of it for sure. I don't, you don't, but there are people that keep track of it. And, and that makes their day. What are you going to do? But at some point, you have to, as an advisor, right? You have to kind of what's right. And you have to kind of take advantage of the opportunity and the chaos when it presents itself. And I think right now the chaos is presenting itself.
Yeah, and I think and I wonder to the upside. That's why, God, we talk about profits that we've not had, Kenny. We've been afraid to sell calls.
Yeah.
And God, they're so damn expensive, and you could sell those things every day, and we haven't because the old Trump would have looked at the market and said, whatever we're doing, I'm not grading out so well. Let's reverse some of this and have us pop right back up. Yet I don't really see it happening here, do you?
Yeah, no, I don't at the moment.
But, yeah.
Wait, hold on. I'm just getting in the cab because I have to get downtown.
All right, buddy. Well, hey, it was good having an elongated talk to you. Take care. You're in New York?
I'm in New York. Yeah. I'm going actually down to Yahoo right now because I got to do Yahoo.
And you're an old guy. You're still hopping a cab instead of got your Uber?
No, well, yeah, I'm still hopping a cab. It just happened to be right outside the apartment when I came out, so I just jumped in the cab.
All right, buddy, you take care of yourself.
Broadway. Okay, I'll talk to you next week.
Yep, SP Futures up 19, NASDAQ is up 76. Do we have Professor?
Yes, we do.
Hey, what's up, Tom?
What's up? How are you? What did you make of the questions I was asking Carl and Kenny about how far down before we pile in? When do we do this? Or do we wait a while? Are we a year out, a day out, an hour out? Where are we?
I think what Trump's doing is, I think he learned a lesson from the previous time he served as president, where he comes in, and I think Trump has always been really good at talking to common people. He can talk to the union workers. I mean, in order for you to build a building, a skyscraper in New York, you have to be able to talk to union workers, from the concrete workers to the electricians. You have to be able to talk to people. And I think the first time he went into office, I think he thought he could do the same thing with the federal bureaucracy, the bureaucrats in the federal bureaucracy. And I think he got his lunch handed to him, right? So this time around, I think what he's doing, he's going full bore ahead. He's going to get rid of all the federal bureaucrats who he thinks are working against his agenda. So he's going to get rid of them. He's going after common sense, what he calls common sense solutions, where he has like 70-80% support. And it's really kind of boxing the Democrats in because, you know, the Democrats' mode has been to oppose everything Trump does, right? So if Trump says he's in favor of ice cream, they oppose it.
Well, I mean, you every time the guy can't say five words without denigrating a Democrat. So it's not like it's one way.
I know. But what he's doing is he's really boxing the Democrats off into a really tiny box. And I think the box gets smaller and smaller and smaller because what they're doing is they're opposing whatever he does. It doesn't matter if 80% or 70% or 60% of the population supports what he's doing. They may not like the way he's doing it, but they support what he's doing.
I don't believe 70% of the people are appreciating the way he's doing this than the man in the moon.
Well, I don't think they like the way he's doing it, but I think they like the things that he is doing. In terms
like
of
what?
The federal bureaucracy.
Well, there's always going to be, I don't want to be argumentative, but I guess I am. There's always going to be somebody, as the poster said in the saloon, just remember, everybody else in the world is overpaid but you and doesn't do a full day's work, except you. I mean, this idea that these people are all schlumps and they're all useless, I don't think, at the end of the day, most people are it might be nice to say, and we have people on the show that say, well, gee, I went to the post office and it looked like, you know, three people were sitting on their ass. Well, okay, fine. I mean, but how many, but their
day. When I go to the post office, I walk in at noon and people put a sign up that says they're on break.
Yeah.
And then they kind of clean up their little desk area for like 15 minutes while there are 30 people standing in line.
Well, I'm saying,
that doesn't happen.
How many executives that you know, or professors you know, spend half the day on their phone?
Well, professors are a different thing. Professors,
we're special.
Yeah, they're a different thing. They have all kinds of market protections against competition, right? They got tenure and whatnot, right? So as long as they don't really say something that upsets somebody say something really negative, right, where they insult somebody, a group of people or a person with power, they're not going to lose their job. So they can pretty much do anything once they get that tenure, for the most part. So,
but I mean, there are people that I've known, and you know, you've been around the country more than me. So, you know,
I've been to every state except Alaska.
I said, there are people. I have a couple of clients. I don't know. I think a couple of them are no longer with us from Arizona, but they had kids that went to high end, you know, biotech schools with the intention of working for the Center of Disease Control because they wanted to do that. One of my buddies, his son is now, he went to Forestry Service School because he wanted to work in a national. To turn around and say all these people are useless, you know, and
I'm not saying that,
but that's the impression.
I'm not supporting the president. I'm just kind of pointing out why I think he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah,
I think he is committed this time to not doing it halfway. I think he has this vision, whether you like it or not. He has a vision, and he's gonna go with it. And he's gonna. I think we need a recession. I don't think he wants the recession next year. I think he wants the recession this year because we have to solve this inflation issue. And it looks like we do have some good news in terms of inflation. The tip spread looks to me, maybe it's in just a normal, natural up and down, but to me it looks like it is kind of heading down, the tip spread. The 10-year break-even inflation rate, that's what the Fed calls it. That looks like it is heading down. You look at yields, treasury yields, for about the last 2 months, they were generally heading down until the last couple of days.
Well, the Fed's pouring money in, so yeah. in the short term. I don't know
if that's pouring money in because M2 was growing at a geometric pace.
Last month it stopped.
And it kind of leveled out. So
yes.
It leveled out when yields were generally declining.
But they're at a level at which the price level. But if you look at,
And then you look at the 10-year minus the 3-month, it went negative, right?
I think
we have to have a down but the a people, one quarter the, or two here's, quarter downturn my, to get this inflation under control.
Here's my concern, Hal, is the people who voted for, and I actually talked to somebody last week, real right winger, blah blah blah. Doesn't make him bad. He's got the impression that whatever happens is better than the last 4 years. First of all, the last 4 years weren't that bad.
Well, it wasn't that bad if you're in the top 20%.
Okay, but that's been going on for. It started easily at 2007, and probably before that, the degradation really 2000, the degradation of the lower and middle classes. You and I could trace that back, and I think we agree on that. What I'm saying is, you got to look at what's happening today, and what the. Yeah. I don't want intelligent people, especially. It's one thing to say there's a certain amount of. Let's say 3 or 4% waste in federal government. It's quite another to brainwash people into thinking that if you drop that from 4 to 2, that like your taxes are going down or other kind of crap. Because if you look at where the inflation is, it's in medicine, it's in college education, it's in housing, it's in those kinds of things. None of those these guys are even touching.
Well,
That's a problem for me.
Tom, a lot of the problem with our healthcare industry is that we have this cartel of big food corporations,
and they're not going to touch them.
And well, hopefully they maybe
he didn't his first time. He didn't. Bush didn't. Obama didn't. Nobody has. Nobody has got the stones to go after these people.
Well, I think that's what's going on here. I think these the guys
not even that close.
I think these guys on this team think they have the stones and they want to go after these.
They're not going to. Why would you start with the Consumer Protection Agency, which, by the way, I never understood why that thing was needed in the first place? It's 0.0001 of the budget.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the, what was it, the Consumer Financial Protection Agency, a lot of it was centered around the debanking that was going on.
But we have article after article. Last week I did some work on Eliquis. $18 a year. The list price is $6.90 a month, and it's been on the market 17 years. The fatso drug, the one that helps you out if you're overweight. $1,000. It costs, $5 to make.
Yeah, the one that you have to continue using after you drop the weight.
Well, I'm saying it's $1,000 a month. It costs $5.
Yeah.
Where is the inflation that's eviscerating our population? It's in healthcare. It's in education.
Well, for one thing, I think taking a pill to lose weight is probably
that has nothing to do with anything. It has the fact, how are these guys getting a patent and getting $1,000 and telling people how well it works? When I have people, some of my buddies are on this stuff, the side effects are dramatic.
Yeah.
Dramatic. And I don't hear that when I listen to a commercial.
Yeah. And you got to keep taking the thing. Well, if you stop taking it, I think it's probably
worse. You're making my point. But how do we have laws that allow somebody to charge $6.90 a month for something that costs them $1.50, Eliquis?
Well, given how much pushback RFK Jr. got in his confirmation hearing from, you know, like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, you know, who's on the side of Big Pharma? I don't think it's RFK Jr. and I don't think it's Trump. I think they are on the side. And that's why I voted the way I did in November. I wanted RFK Jr. at HHS.
We'll see how much he can get if he goes after these guys. I'm praying that he does. Everybody's got this hope, you know. But they're not where they're heading right now.
These are powerful cartels. I mean, they pretty much own the politicians. They own the Republicans. They own the Democrats.
That's what I'm saying. I don't see how
they own them. So I think that's what Trump's. I think that's what Trump is thinking this time around.
Why does anybody?
He's not worried about re-election, Tom.
How does he
going to go after these guys?
How does an exceptionally rational person, which I think you are, ever put any kind of thought into what that guy's thinking?
Well, I think you have to. I think you have to understand where they're coming from.
I don't think they do.
Well, I think he's. Honestly, I think what he's trying to do is he's going to do it right the way he thinks it should be done this time. The last time he got, you know, swallowed up by the bureaucracy. This time he's going all in, and I think, and I'm just telling you this because it's important for investors to know what's going to happen over the next 2 years. I don't think he wants the recession in 2 years. I think he wants the recession now because he doesn't want to lose the house. So what he's doing is he's going to bite the bullet. We'll have a couple of quarters of negative economic growth. The media will call it a recession, which they didn't do during the Biden administration. We had two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth. They said that wasn't a definition of recession, if you remember. But he wants to have a recession this year, right?
It also happened the last couple quarters of the Trump administration, as you recall. Yeah.
Well, that's because we were in COVID.
Well, okay, right? And we were in COVID with Biden, too.
Yeah, I know, but
the Biden was a blend of both of those two lame-ass administrations, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah. Well, they incorrectly listened to the experts in the bureaucracy, in my opinion. They shouldn't have been listening to those guys. They shouldn't have trounced our liberties for some cockamamie idea that they made up. And even Fauci has admitted that the six-foot distancing thing, it was just purely arbitrary. And then his pronouncement on masking. If you listen to Fauci,
you know, it was actually more than arbitrary. This is frustrating.
He said it wasn't based on any kind of science whatsoever.
Actually, there was a study done, and I don't even find it anymore because I tried to find it after I read it the first time. You might have it because I think I sent it to you 6 years ago. It was a Harvard University study done in like the 1920s regarding tuberculosis, which is, I guess, very contagious. And they said that a 3-foot spread was enough or something. And because whatever Harvard did saying you were okay on a plane was absolutely against the study they did in the 1920s, which gave you some kind of an idea of how much the airlines gave them for that study to come out the way it did.
Yeah.
Being duh. There was all kinds of weird crap going on, as we know.
The whole thing about the airlines was ridiculous, too, because I read articles about how the air gets changed out so often while you're flying that it's cleaner than a surgical room.
No, it's not.
That's what I. Those are the articles that
I. You know, it's even more bizarre because I'm. You know, I used to fly when they used to let people smoke on there. In one of the, where's an airline aeronautics guy to tell me I'm wrong, the older planes used to take in more outside air. That's one of the reasons why, you know, that you could smoke on those damn things, even though it was pretty brutal if you walked through the smoking section. The old ones, like the DC-8s and the 727s and those things, they actually took in more outside air. And one of the reasons that the newer planes save on fuel is they save on that. They don't take as much outside air in as the old ones did. You could never have a smoking section on a new plane. The whole place would be gagging. But I learned this from my aerospace guys at Pullman, right? They hired a lot of guys from Pullman or Boeing. And, you know, and so Harvard come out and say, you're safer there than you are walking down the street, or whoever said that. How would anybody ever believe that? You know,
well, if they said you're safer in an airplane than walking on a street, I don't buy that at all.
Well, they did. You couldn't, if you walked on Chicago's lakefront, get a load of this. The lady used to be our producer.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. All that stuff they said about being outside, having to wear a mask while you're back, that was all garbage, Tom.
Let me ask you this.
The governments and experts pushed those lies.
Our girlfriend, Angelica, very pleasant, very shapely, not that anybody ever noticed, was out walking on the lakefront during COVID, and she's got a couple miles, so she sits down on one of the benches. Only person within 100 yards. Two coppers come up and tell her she's got to move along. The rule is you can walk on the lakefront, but you can't stop. Now, do you think they were worried about COVID, or they wanted to see her walking away?
Well, they probably wouldn't see her walking away.
I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. But then again, being, you know...
The whole thing about the outside with the masking...
Oh, it was nuts.
It's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, how do you think I felt when I actually caught it early on, long before there was a vaccine, and went and got the test for the antibodies, and I was percolating along with the antibody. I was no danger to anybody, and yet I still
you had natural immunity, and they also said natural immunity.
Which they said it was no good. I still, if I had listened to them, I'd have went and got a shot the next week, which is insanity when your body's getting its own immunity for something.
The guy that made the first couple breakthroughs on the mRNA, he said that, I think he said Omicron Delta is basically nature's vaccine. Because it's mild and it spreads rapidly. And, you know, I don't think Fauci would have agreed with that. I was saying, well, hey, just take Omicron Delta and put it in a vial and then just give it to everybody.
Well, they gave, for those that don't remember, and again, we got other stuff to talk about, the market here, but they gave everybody, there were seven companies when they were pushing for the vaccines. I think you were on the day. I somehow got it somewhere buried because I know I sent it to you guys. They gave, I think it was seven, wasn't it, Hal? Seven companies were working on a vaccine. Yeah.
Let's not call it a vaccine because a vaccine stops the spread and stops the disease.
One of the ladies who was doing the show absolutely had a knockdown drag out with me one day that it was a vaccine. I said, no, it's not. Yeah. I mean, like it's a flu shot. It's not a vaccine. A vaccine, you take it once and that's it, right? Yeah. And anyway,
like polio.
Anyway, there were seven companies, and actually, it was done. I actually thought this was a pretty good move on Trump's part. This is back before people generally knew that it came out of Wuhan. It was half manufactured by.
Oh, we knew all along that it came out of Wuhan.
We didn't. Somebody did, and it took us. It took us years to weasel it out of them. Okay, but and the communist government knew, but they weren't saying.
The media I was reading, everybody was saying it came from Wuhan, and they
knew it came from there. They didn't know it came from the lab.
Government agencies were financing gain of function research.
They were still testing the animals in the open air market.
Yeah,
for a while. Anyway, what I'm saying is they gave seven companies a bunch of dough and actually signed contracts for the shots before they even had them made, because they wanted people to have the shots ready. And with all the other money they were spending, it didn't seem like too much money to me. They said, okay, if you think you're onto this vaccine, make 20 million shots or something even before it's approved. And they did it to seven companies. And the weird part, Al, was actually done pretty well, is if the company said, we got the research covered, we don't need any money for that, I think they got like $20 a shot or something like
now,
that.
Now, here's the question. How did they get it so ready so fast?
That's what I'm saying. Is they,
when they, you do gain-of-function research...
They've been doing this kind of...
You're looking for the vaccine for something that isn't a problem yet.
They've been doing this kind of vaccine research forever, Carl. But I'm saying, well, here's what they did. If you had to give them money for the research, you only got like $12 a shot. So it actually was done somewhat intelligently. But the idea was one of these seven guys is going to come up with something that actually works and is approved. And we want to have it ready. If it's approved on a Thursday, we want to be able to start sticking people on a Friday. So in terms of management, I thought it was actually pretty good. And I was saying the Trump people are pretty bright on this one. Now,
the problem I have with it is they granted these companies immunity from...
Well, that too. Yeah. But, I mean, I wasn't...
And Biden and Harris had it correct during that election year. They said they weren't going to take a vaccine that Trump pushes to market in under 6 months. But then as soon as they become president, all of a sudden...
It was already in the works. Once it got approved, there's no way that Biden was going to say it's approved, but I'm not letting it out there with people dying. That was never going to
happen. Well, here's an interesting thing. I had a conversation with a VA doctor, and it kind of shocked me because she told me that they were taking people off the trials, the Pfizer trials. And I asked her, why would they take, you know, because I knew why. But I asked her, why do you think they took people off the vaccine trials? And she goes, because they were having negative reactions. So you got to take them out of the vaccine trial. That way you're
safe. I'm not about defending this, plus I want to talk more about the market.
Yeah.
The tests were done so half-assed, but they also were done in such a way they almost didn't care if you got a negative reaction as long as you didn't die.
Yeah.
I mean, we were in pretty dire straits back then. I mean, we had people in nursing homes going down 40% of the people in like 2 weeks in some nursing homes. So the idea that they gave you something, they almost didn't care if it was going to cause a problem for you 10 years from now because you only had 3 weeks if you were...
The reason for the lockdowns and the masking, which was ridiculous, because a virus particle is substantially smaller than an asbestos particle. And an asbestos particle is substantially smaller than the pore in an N95 mask. We can't use N95 mask for asbestos removal in the United States Navy. Why? Because those asbestos particles are smaller than the pores, and they go right through the mask. The virus particles are smaller than the asbestos particles. And so what you're doing is you're breathing in and out virons, or the virus particles. You're breathing them in and out of the mask. The mask is great for bacteria. The mask catches the bacteria. And Fauci knew this because in 2019, in a Bloomberg interview that I shared on Twitter, he laughed at the idea of wearing a mask to protect yourself against a respiratory virus for the reasons that I just mentioned.
Hal, they had a nice guy. I love debating with him. A very liberal attorney hangs out in my local watering hole. He's got one of the ones with the, like if you're going to rob a stagecoach, you pull a bandana up. Mask.
It was ridiculous. I wore it as a protest.
There were people who were wearing those all over the place.
I wore it as a protest to indicate how ridiculous I thought the whole thing was.
I said to him, you know, if you use one of the other masks, and I didn't know about the particular size, I said, you know, you really got to change one of these things. Like every four, I mean, it's not like a surgeon who wears one doesn't have a new one every time he operates on somebody. I mean,
those guys are changing those things.
I know. So I said to him, I go, When's the last time you washed that thing? And he goes, I've never washed it. what are you talking about? Anyway, what do you say we go to break and we talk about the market here? Because you got to let me know when or if and when I pull people's money out of T-bills and engage this market, and when or if and when I can lay off on put protection. I don't think I'm there yet in either one of these, but you can tell me. SP Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 32. See, we're sinking here. I wish I was more of a technical guy, because if we get the rug pull out from under us today, which I hope we don't, I don't know what that says, Hal. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Going on back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 7. The NASDAQ futures up 30. Ricky, who's now a veteran of the New York City subways and everything. He was there this weekend. Oh. He's all set and ready to go. You should have asked Hal how to get around out there. He knows the way. But
I became a New York subway savant, man. I got really good at it.
Ricky managed to get from LaGuardia to his hotel on the subway. It's pretty good. First time out there, don't you think?
That is a long ride.
Yeah.
It was actually my second time out there, but yeah, I'm actually pretty proud of myself, man. I got around in the city and everything. It was cool, and it was exciting.
Oh, man. Were you on the subway for a couple hours or an hour?
It was about an hour and a half from LaGuardia to the hotel, which was at Sheraton. So, yeah, kind of a bit of a
plus, you
got to
take the bus over there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I took a shuttle, but it was free, though, so not complaining.
Oh, God. We had Dow futures up 119. Individual stacks. We got Goldman Sachs, which we got clobbered yesterday, is up 6. We've got Tesla only coming back $1.30, and it was down like 40 yesterday or something. So Tesla's down $230 from its high. Now its high was after the election, and it's given up all the election gains. Every time you look at these numbers, just keep thinking how many shares are outstanding. So it's down 250 points, and there's 3.2 billion shares outstanding. So that's, what is that, almost $800 billion out of somebody's account somewhere. I mean, it's not like this. I know people that have, you know, had $2 million accounts, and now they're 1.16, 1.5, 1.4. I mean, it's getting to be real money here, which isn't to say it won't go right back up, because it seems like it has all for the last
In a year, it'll be back up, and it'll be fine.
The problem we got, Hal, is that not all the time your stocks, the market might be back. It might not be your stuff. That's a problem. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 235.6%. Hang Seng down a buck. These guys have been all over the place, and all of a sudden they're unchanged. Shanghai up 13.4%, so not much going on there. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 40. These guys were all down yesterday. FTSE down 38.4%. CAC around down 23.2%. So it's what we say, it's an inside day over there, at least so far. Bonds, unchanged, 4.22. So the 10-year, like Hal said, has been down a little bit. The Bund, however, has gone the other way. These guys are closing the gap here. I don't know if you watched this, Hal. The Bund is up to 2.87. So they're only a point and a half below our 10-year. That was, at one point, that was, what, like 3% or something or more? The Japan down 5 basis points, 1.51. Oil, which cannot get out of its own way. Today it's up 89 cents, but still only 66.92. I mean, as soon as I declared the new range was 71 to 76, it dropped 5 hours out of that range. We're back to the old range. So much for me declaring ranges. Brent up 94 cents, 70.22. Natural gas up 6 cents, 4.55. RBOB up 2 cents, 2.12. Gold, which has been sneaking down, is bouncing back up today. Up 17.90, 29.17. Silver up 41 cents, 32.94. Copper, which has been the winner in the last few weeks, up 8 cents, 4.75. Foreign exchange, and again, this has been very... We got the euro now is at 109. And I'm going to say it was 104.7 forever. And I'm going to let Professor Hal opine on what a 4% move in a currency does to anybody who does business back and forth. You're either a big winner or a big fat-ass loser, one or the other. British pound, 129.4. Crypto, and this has been all over the block. It's up 2,700 today, but only 81,532. Again, it was down yesterday during the day. That was 105,000 a couple of weeks ago. Bleh. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
7:37 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We got 49 degrees right now with a high of 46. I don't know how that works, but that's the data. Times of clouds and sun, breezy and cooler. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 34 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 53 degrees right now with a high of 84. Partly sunny and some cloudiness beginning tonight with a low of 54 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, we're looking at 27 minutes. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's. Iman Edens from Lane Cook, 42 minutes. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, another 42 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 26 minutes. Lastly, inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 38 minutes. Let's talk about sports. Yesterday, Bulls beat Pacers 121 to 103, and the Suns lose to Grizzlies 118 to 120. Yesterday, Avalanche beat the Blackhawks as well, 3-0. But for baseball fans in Chicago, it was a good day yesterday. White Sox beat the Athletics 10-3, and the Cubs beat Guardians 7-4. However, Diamondbacks lose to the Dodgers 2-6. Today, we got Cubs against Brewers at 3:05 p.m., White Sox against Padres at 3:10 p.m. Lastly, Diamondbacks against Royals at 3:10 p.m. as well. Back over to you guys.
The Cubs are going to Japan pretty soon, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah, they're doing. They and the Dodgers are going to play a couple games over there, playing a couple exhibition games and a couple real games.
Oh, that's really cool.
So that should be interesting. This is what you can do with headlines, Hal. I could see you doing something like this, being a professor. It says here, Trump to buy Tesla.
That's weird.
Well, what he actually said was, to help Elon out, he was going to go out and buy a Tesla.
Oh, buy a Tesla. Okay.
The headline is Trump to buy Tesla.
Yeah, I thought he was going to go out and create a Tesla reserve like Bitcoin, which I think is ridiculous.
I've been asking.
I'll tell you though, Tesla. I have a friend who is, you know, pretty conservative. She's a conservative. I'm a pretty radical libertarian.
Whoa! She's more.
And she went out and bought a Tesla.
You're not conservative?
No. I'm a pretty radical libertarian.
So you can walk around in a striped suit and tell me you're not in a striped suit.
No, I'm conservative in my religious views, but I keep them to myself. I don't want government.
Well, you hate Democrats.
No, I don't hate Democrats. I think they're boxing themselves in. My in-laws are Democrats. My wife is a Democrat. I don't hate them. I just think they're boxing themselves in. I don't think they're doing a very good job of trying to figure out how to navigate this new Trump world. That's all I'm saying. But this friend of mine, she bought a Tesla, and she tells me that when she gets in the car knows it's her. And the car knows where she wants to go to work. It takes an hour, and she just sits there, and the thing drives her from her home without any input from her and takes her to her work, her parking spot.
I thought you weren't supposed to.
That's a pretty incredible car.
I thought they weren't supposed to. She has to have her hands on the wheel or something.
But the amount of driving she does is minimal.
Why would anybody
the
want
thing
that?
Basically
that
drives
itself. Curiosity. Why would anybody want that?
Well, you know, the way I look at it is, in 10 years, every American's probably going to be buying or own a car like this. Poor people, rich people. So in the past, only rich people could be chauffeured around. In 10, 15 years, everybody's going to be chauffeured around by an AI self-driving
vehicle. It'll be a cold day in hell before a car drives me.
You know, I like the old 68 Ford pickup truck I had. My knee came to my chest when I wanted to shift it because the clutch was like, you know, it took about a foot deep. It traveled about a foot deep when you pressed it to shift it. I got so good at not pressing the clutch and just shifting it without the clutch. It was a manual. And then it didn't have power steering.
Oh, God.
When I was in Michigan, I welded together a bracket so I could mount a bracket onto the engine wall, the firewall, and then put a ladder model power brake booster on the truck because the thing would not stop. I mean, I could put both feet on the brake, and the truck would not stop. It was about 7,000 pounds with a solid front axle, four-wheel drive, and it got about 8 miles a gallon. It sounded like a tank. But I was able to put a power brake booster on it.
Solid front axle. Those things are bumpy. Ram Chargers had those, too.
Oh, man, that thing was I could stop on dime, but then the steering was horrible, right? I always had to make sure that I could always get the truck out with minimal steering.
Well, I had a 65 GTO.
Ooh, nice.
With a stick and a no power.
You still have it?
No, I sold it to some guy, and I don't know why I did that. But no power steering, no power brakes. You had to have some strength, let's put it that way.
And, yeah, well, when you hit the gas, it snapped your neck, right?
It needed another gear. If you're going 70 in fourth, and you took your foot off the brake, it was like you put the brake on. It was like you were in second in any other car. I mean, you had to be, I don't know what RPM you needed to go 70 miles an hour at, you know, in the thing in the fourth gear. It needed a fifth gear like really bad, and it didn't have one. I mean, I when I was looking for one. Some guy had one. This is car talk, which everybody's probably going crazy with here. But one guy had put some kind of a 430 rear end in the damn thing.
Mm.
He actually started out in third because the rear end was so. you didn't need for actually the GTO when they used to do time trials for those things. The stock car like I had, if you want to just do a quarter mile, you didn't shift at all. You start out in second and went. You didn't need first because the thing was geared all screwed up. You really didn't need first at all.
Well, my first gear was not first gear. It's a gear where if you want to knock down a tree,
that's what they used to call it, a crawler gear. It was you actually started out in second unless you
You know, yeah, you start out second, yeah.
Unless you were pulling a stump or something, you know.
Well, that 68 Ford, I had to time it, and it set the, I had to set the gap on the distributor every month. And I had to time it every month because...
Why? Why would it keep moving?
It would slip a little bit, and my gas mileage would go from, like, I don't know, I could get it to about 11 or 12 at best, but get down to 6.
Ricky has no idea what we're talking about. He had to time it.
Yeah, anytime I pulled into the gas station,
buy a timing light?
Well, I don't know. You can get one on Amazon. But, yeah, every month I pull my timing light out when I'm filling up the gas tank. I time the engine real quick with my half-inch wrench, and then I set the dwell. And I do that once a month at the gas station when I was filling it up. Just so I could optimize the gas.
What was it? I
didn't make any money back then.
Ricky, what you used to do is you hooked the timing light on the distributor, and it would let you know when the engine came around. It was like a strobe light, went on and off.
Yeah.
And there was little notches in the side of the thing. It was the flywheel when it came around, right?
And I put some of that liquid paper on the dot so I could see it more easily. Yeah, so I could do it quickly.
What was it in My Cousin Vinny? Would you say how many
bulls on accurate?
Yeah, something about it. Because if you advance the timing, Ricky, you got a little more pop out of the engine, but it didn't start as well. So,
yeah.
God. Anyway, politics interfacing with the markets, which it sort of already does, with the interest rates. We also have, nobody seems to know where this, how much of this is really tariff stuff. I just get this weird feeling, Hal, because, you know, we did some of the stuff when you're talking about the Friedmanites. We did a lot of work in college on effect of things like tariffs, you know, where somebody would give you, Milton Friedman, not just him, the rest of these guys, they'd give you your exam would be something on a Time magazine, you know, like I forget who the hell he was, the president at the time, you know, Nixon or Ford threatens to put tariffs on Canada. Work this through the entire economy in a stock and flow analysis type of thing. What's it can do to everybody? These are incredibly. This is. I don't know that I'm disappointed so much with the administration. I'm disappointed in a lot of my fellow Americans, because a lot of people are believing this crap without checking it out. And not that people didn't do it with the Democrats said stuff, and not people didn't do it during COVID, but you can't always believe this stuff. Somewhere along the line, you have to pick up. Now you can do it on the internet. You don't have to go to the library. You have to pick up the thing. How many public employees are we talking about? Are we up that many since the last 10 years? And I look at it and I go, they don't look like we're up any at all. I mean, yes, it's a problem. Is it as big of a problem? There's people who will tell you that the bloat is so dramatic in the last 15 years. It's just not true. I mean, what has Canada done in the last 3 years where they're not an enemy? I don't know. They don't seem to know. Is there some tariff inequity that if you dug through and wanted to make it your talking horse? Probably. But they probably feel there's one coming our way. You know, I don't know. I mean, we've had a sugar tariff forever, right? And the sugar tariff, not only that, you probably know this, I don't know if anybody else does, it's a step function tariff. I never saw one of those before, have you?
Well, no.
Up to this amount, what's the limit? What's the word you use for you? You can import so many?
Yeah.
What's the word for that? Up to a certain amount of sugar, it's 4 cents a pound. After that amount, it's like 17 cents a pound.
Yeah.
So
it's like income taxes.
So we decide we only want this because we're protecting sugar people. You know, whether you should or you shouldn't.
Or we're protecting. We're actually, what we're doing is we're protecting corn syrup. That's what we're doing.
No, actually, it's sugar beets.
Well, but what I'm saying is, putting those tariffs on imported sugar means that companies will find it less expensive. I mean, I think companies want to put sugar, real sugar, in Pepsi because it just tastes better. And
a lot of stuff.
These tariffs are intended to do what? Get companies to switch. Well, that's to what you. Corn syrup.
You just,
because the corn farmers in Iowa are a very powerful lobby.
Well, that's why I love you, because you're always a step ahead. No man can do one thing. The idea is we're protecting our sugar people, and you just said, yeah. Guess what? It goes.
My dad grew sugar beets in his last year of farming.
And you just said, guess what? It goes a lot further than that. Yes, it does. Yeah. Duh. Yeah. Right? It creates another whole industry, competitors to sugar.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. doesn't have to, like, ban corn syrup in soda. What he has to do is get rid of all these tariffs on imported sugar.
He's never going to get rid of the sugar tariff. Yeah. It's been there for 100 years.
Yeah.
Never. And it started out, I think, for sugar, before people even knew, well, what's the stuff, dehydrated, the sugar that goes into other stuff. What do you call it? There's a name for it. It's corn syrup, but what's the term that they use that made it into sugar?
Fructose?
No, it's what's the name of it? Hydrated. If you look at a bottle of any, like, syrup or anything, it'll say what's in there. But it's essentially a sugar made out of corn. You're right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but I mean, you know, there's always more to this than meets the eye, and I just hope people go through and you know, cut through the BS, no matter which side of the aisle it is, and actually look at the numbers a little bit. And, you know, they're not, you know, is this hatred with the Canadians, I listen to the Trudeau who's leaving say, hey, look, you know, people here want to go to Florida, now they're not going to. You know, we like to drink Jack Daniels up here. People love it. We're not going to. And by the way, when we boo your hockey team, we're not booing your team. We're booing your president. And just realize that. We don't dislike Americans. I don't think Americans dislike Canadians.
Honestly, I think what he's doing with these tariffs is he wants to bring industry back to the United States. I think he's listened to the voters, and the voters in between New York City and LA, the voters in the heartland of the United States have been speaking to him. And I think he honestly wants to, and I'm not sure if this is going to help him out, but I think in his heart of hearts, he wants to help these people out. And I think he believes what we've been doing for the last 20, 30 years, maybe since Nixon ended the international gold exchange for American gold. I think what he wants to do is
Nixon ended it supposedly, but the guy who really ended it was De Gaulle, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, when De Gaulle wanted his gold, right?
Yeah. Well, hey, guys, you're saying it's $35 an ounce. Guess what? Here's a whole bunch of dollars. Give me the 35.
Yeah,
give me the ounce.
It was a binding price ceiling, and Gresham's Law says the bad money will push out the good money. But what it really is when you have two forms of money and one is price capped, then what happens is people want the price capped money. So they want their gold, they don't want the dollars. And so it was flowing out. I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if Nixon was late in removing that price cap. If he was late in doing that, I wouldn't be surprised if there was very little gold in Knox, Fort Knox.
He wasn't. For those, the history of this, and again, I...
We haven't really had an accounting, a real accounting, since then.
So. I think you're probably right about that. But there's a real lot of gold in a building in Manhattan, too. Not just Fort Knox.
Well, but
there's a huge depository, man.
Is that gold? Is that privately owned gold, or is that?
I think both. I think the government has some there too. But I'm not Mr. Expert. But what we're talking about Nixon, even though it seems like a gazillion years ago, which it was.
Yeah.
The economic, shall we say, the economic drums were the same. The U.S. was fighting the Vietnam War. It was costing a lot of money. And, oh, by the way, why don't we just print some more money?
Yeah, they inflated it instead of taxing.
They inflated it instead of taxing it. And so,
Which is a tax. Well,
for certain segments of the population, Milton Friedman used to say inflation is the cruelest tax.
Yeah.
Now, see, now, you're not supposed to say that. You're not a Friedmanite. You know, even though you remind me, you could be his kid, for God's sake. Virtually everything that you talk about, you're exactly like him. Which, by the way, I think is terrific.
I'm a fan of I love Murray Rothbard, and but I'm a pragmatic. I guess I'm a pragmatic Rothbardian, which would be confused with being a Friedmanite.
Well, he was pretty pragmatic. You pour money in the system, you get inflation. Duh.
Yeah,
that's pretty pragmatic. But anyway, that's why from '67, and I talk once in a while about how when the market kept going up, 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 now we're having a little bit of a correction, but it was almost the same amount of time as 2000 to today, right? I mean, 2008 to today. It's like 14, 15 years, right? Which is essentially...
There's definitely inflation. You look at margin...
But I mean, it was 67.
Yeah.
to 82. But you know what? You've never. I don't know if anybody has the answer to this, though. You know, why in those days, when the inflation went as high as it did, it lasted longer, okay, back then. Why in those days did the long-term rates and your bank rates reflect the inflation, and this time they didn't? Was this because, I'll set this up, if your mom, like my mom or maybe your grandmother, went to the bank in 1978 and the inflation rate was 10%, she got 13% on her savings. She got the implied inflation, and she got the real rate of interest, which is 3. So she actually was able to keep pace through her savings, or if you bought a bond, you did too. So the anticipate that your real rate of interest is supposed to be, well, the rate you pay is supposed to be a combination of the real rate, which is 2, 2.5, 3, actually what somebody pays to use your money, and the inflation. So if the inflation is 10%, I give you $100, you better give me the ten bucks that it's depleted over the year plus the 3 that I want you to do it. So the inflation rate should be 113, or you should give me at the end of the year 113, which worked the whole way through 82. This time, that didn't happen. We had an inflation rate of 7, 8, 9, wherever it got up to. And still, when you went in the bank, they gave you scatat, as my grandmother used to say. You got 1%. And you sit there, is that because the banks are a cartel? And anytime somebody shorted the bonds, thinking that, boy, this rate's got to go up, the Fed bought them from it. And they put $5 trillion on their balance sheet. They didn't allow them to go down. Why do you think that they were able to pull that off? You know? I don't think they can do it again. Well, I don't think they can do it again here.
Well, they capped interest rates, right? They capped the price of reserves. They capped it with interest on reserves. And two, I think what's been going on since the mid-1970s is we told everybody outside the United States, you can't convert your dollars into gold. We essentially stole their gold because gold was redeemable, right? You could give the Federal Reserve a bunch of dollars and you could redeem it in gold if you wanted it. And the same thing happened in the 1930s when FDR ended that domestically. So FDR steals the gold that could have been redeemed by Americans. He steals the gold.
He made people sell their gold to the government.
Yeah. And then Nixon does the same thing internationally, right? And in order to get away with that, I think we had a promise to be the world's police force, which is we had to run deficits to do that. And then on top of that, we have these trade deficits. And I've been thinking about the trade deficit differently after listening to this guy named Luke Gorman. I think his name's Luke Gorman. He's an investor. And what we do, a trade deficit is the exportation. We're exporting dollars, which is inflationary, right? And we get cheap consumer goods, that Neil Young song, piece of crap.
Yeah, but not necessarily. Again, hell, unless you probably out of everybody have actually gone through some of this. If you actually go through the trade deficit versus the current account deficit, you can have a big trade deficit with somebody, and it's not a problem because it balances out with a floating exchange rate.
But the dollars that we export come back to the United States in the form of buying a condo in New York City.
They could come back in dividends and just right back into people's pockets.
Yeah, it could. It could.
What we're talking about is if you build a factory in Mexico, okay, and the Chevys come this way, you're going to have a trade deficit because you're importing goods more than you're exporting to Mexico. But then the factory makes money and they shove the money back at you. The actual cash going back and forth is even, correct?
Well, I think a lot of that cash, though, because of the triple taxation in General Motors profits when they're building things overseas, a lot of that cash is kept overseas. It doesn't come back. And the Republicans...
Well, that's another issue. It's another...
Well, the Republicans every once in a while say, hey, we'll do this. We'll have a one-time bring the cash back to the United States kind of thing, right? And I think that's kind of wrong-headed. I think what's going on is if you look at two different worlds, one world that we can't observe and one world that we're actually in, is you generally get, in our world compared to the one we can't observe, you generally get Americans doing what? Over-consuming in things that end up in landfills. That's what that wouldn't exist in the other world we can't observe. So we have this importation of consumer goods, cheap consumer goods from China, from other, you know, Vietnam or whatever, Indonesia. We get this importation of cheap goods that end up in a landfill. Consumer goods end up, whether it's a car, they end up in a landfill somewhere. And what
do you mean, a car ends up on a bridge? You're making more metal.
Yeah. What China is doing, it's taking a lot of these dollars and it's buying hard assets. It's buying building roads for African nations so that it can get at the rare earth metals in these African nations. So it's buying hard assets. We're generally buying consumer goods. And that right there, according to Luke Gorman, and I'm thinking about this, I'm not saying...
Well, China's different because they won't let people here own the places over there, but other countries do.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I think that is what Trump has been listening to. Vance, I think, buys into this whole narrative, and I'm just trying to explain what Trump is trying to do. And I think he's a true believer in
this. Don't take this wrong, but why do people who voted for the man immediately try and inject some of their logic into his brain? He is what he is. He doesn't care about you or me or anybody.
I think if you want to plan your investment strategy out, you have to understand where he's coming from. And
how could anybody understand that? He changes it every 30 seconds.
I know, but what he's trying to do, he's trying to bring the factories back to the U.S. He's trying to bring the manufacturing back.
He's trying. You see what they did on the
I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just trying to explain what he's trying
to do. You see what they did on the my favorite page, or actually my not favorite page, where the what's the hell name of the thing, where they have all the different statistics going on. It started out being the U.S. debt monitor.
Oh yeah.
You know what they did? They up until last week there was a line in the federal government receipts that let you know what the tariff income is.
Yeah.
Now they must have been threatened by the guy or something. They now, instead of having tariff receipts, which is $67 billion last year, the last time I looked, which is a pimple in the ass of an elephant, basically.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to fund the government with tariffs.
Well, guess what? They have replaced that number with something called future tariff revenues, and it's $656 billion.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
They took the old number off. There's not an actual number on here.
Yeah.
So it went from, they upped it 10 times. Because what the message here, and let's put it this way, I'm not going to accuse. Yeah, I guess I am. I'm going to accuse somebody of the tariffs are something we pay. If you were to go through small town America and say who pays the tariff, what percentage of people are you going to say the Canadians or the Mexicans? 90, 80?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Well, this, I don't think, in my opinion, governance is not giving out the big lie every friggin' day. If you tell people, I'm putting tariffs on timber, by the way, next time you go buy a 2x4, it's going to be higher. If that's the truth, just say it. But nobody wants to do that. Evidently, that's why I'm not a politician, right?
Well,
but
I think we got to be really careful. Tariff is just a tax, right?
On us.
When you tax something, the supplier of that good and the buyer of that good share in the tax. And the burden depends on...
It depends.
Well, the burden always depends on who is more sensitive to a price increase.
You just agreed with me without knowing it. Every single one is so complicated. You don't know where it's going to be.
Yeah.
And when you lob them out.
You have to understand the elasticity.
Yeah.
If we're importing something from Canada and we can import it from like Brazil as well, right? Then there's substitutability between the two, right? So if we slap a tariff on Canada and we don't slap that same tariff on Brazil, we'll just stop buying it from Canada and we'll end up buying it from Brazil. But here's the rub. Canada will have this, you know, superabundance of whatever they're producing. They're not selling it in the United States anymore. Brazil is now selling it to us. Who was Brazil selling it to? Well, maybe they were selling it to France.
Yeah.
Canada does what? They just sell it to France.
Right.
Because
or the people here might see that the prices of the imported stuff go higher, just raise theirs, and you lose all around.
Well, if the tariff is 25%, what I'm saying is prices aren't necessarily going to go up by 25%.
Right.
Because this is a beach. These are world markets. And all you're doing is you're taking sand from the north side of the beach and you put it on the south side.
But even the simplest of tariffs, or what you think might be the simplest of tariffs, back in the day when Mercedes's were made in Germany and shipped here whole. You put a tariff on. Now, that's not the way it is anymore. Some are assembled here, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So you put a 25% tariff on the Mercedes's. It started out as 100 grand, now it's 125. Well, Mercedes might say, well, wait a minute. We're competing with Cadillac. Now we've priced ourselves out, or we got priced out. We're going to drop our price 10. Okay, so now the tariff not only goes down now the price goes down to 115, but now the tariff's actually a little less, right? So it's going to be 112 or something along those lines.
If consumers consider the Mercedes and the Cadillac as perfect substitutes.
Well, okay, but now this Cadillac's going to say, Cadillac's going to say, wow, we were at 50. Looks to me like we can go to 60. Okay, so you might not get anywhere at all on this, except you do get some money in the government.
Yeah.
But Cadillac, you don't think that if we increase the tariffs on wood from Canada, we might buy some for Brazil, but the guys out in the Pacific Northwest are going, yippee, right?
Well, here's the thing about wood. I don't know if you've ever been out east or out west in Oregon. Out in Oregon, where my dad was manager of a farm called Miracle Potato, which was between Boardman, Oregon, Eagan, Oregon. It was all potato fields, like 10 miles south of the interstate that goes to Portland, Oregon. Today, it's all trees. So, and these trees are genetically engineered to grow really quickly. And so when you're driving along the interstate, you look south, and you'll see trees that are 10 foot tall, then 15 feet
tall. These are all softwood?
Yeah, and they're using these trees to do what? To make paper. So when we're
or 2x4s, about a 2x4s are nowhere near as good as they were. Look at a 2x4 going to a new house compared to a 2x4 in an old house 30 years ago.
Yeah, so these trees are genetically engineered to grow really fast, and you see like rows of them at 10 feet, and then rows of them at 15 feet, and rows of them at 25 feet, et cetera, along the highway where it was potato fields. So if we weren't buying the lumber from Canada, what would probably be going on is you would see more of these tree farms throughout the United States.
Well, we got a dash here, but just so you know, since we're talking about it, when somebody says it's a tariff on softwoods, it has nothing to do with whether the wood is soft. It has to do with a broadleaf tree is by definition hardwood, correct?
Yeah.
Where a pine tree is by definition softwood. It doesn't matter whether the wood's soft or not, correct?
Yeah.
Anyway, hell, as usual, good stuff, buddy. Where are you teaching this week? You're just the one spot now?
Well, spring break is over. And the semester restarted, and I instituted a 20% late penalty with my asynchronous courses, the ones that aren't in person. And I tell you, I'm a little happier this semester because last semester I just had the due date at the end of the semester for all the assignments. And at this point in the semester, half the students hadn't done anything. This semester I only got about maybe 5% to 10% of students that are behind. So it's kind
good
of
for fun. You. Yeah. So did you go down to spring break in Daytona and hang around the beach?
No, I did not do that. I haven't been to spring break since I was in the Navy. I went to 701 South in Daytona, and I wanted to meet up with downtown Julie Brown on MTV Dance.
Oh, God. On that note, SP Futures up 4. We were negative for a minute, but now we're back up 3. NASDAQ Futures up 25. So far, the big bounce is a little wobbly here, but maybe we will continue to the upside.
It's going to be wobbly.
Take care of yourself, but talk to you next Tuesday, if not before. Be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.